Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lynnonville, we are here when you need us.
And now WDEV-FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning. Great to be back after a long weekend. Just a heads up, with the Democratic National Convention and with primaries fast approaching, the next 2 weeks of Open Mic is going to be dominated with a lot of politics, because there's a lot of politics happening around us. And I'll make sure that some guests will be not politically affiliated from time to time. But just to give everyone knowledge of what we're doing here, this week we'll interview the major party candidates for lieutenant governor, and next week the major party candidates for governor. Today is going to be a very busy program. First, with Lieutenant Governor candidate Randy Brock, Republican Lieutenant Governor candidate. He will join us in studio. Matter of fact, he's sitting right across from me right now. And then Secretary of State Jim Condos will join us by calling in from Philly, from Philadelphia. And we'll talk to him about the convention and the upcoming August 9th primary. If you have any questions on how to make sure you're registered for the primary or any other questions dealing with the primary, give us a call. I think Randy and other candidates would welcome you participating in that August 9th primary. Then after we check in with our colleagues at Talk Media News, WCAX reporter Kyle Modura will join us from Philly to get his perspective on happenings at the convention. The last 30 minutes of the program will open up the phone lines for your calls. I'm particularly interested in your perspective on whether Sarah Silverman's message to Bernie Sanders supporters, which basically said, stop being ridiculous, is one, if you're a Bernie supporter, if you think you were being ridiculous, and two, if you are a Bernie supporter, will you step in line now and support Hillary Clinton? And one of the things I wanted to get to is, should have Debbie Wasserman Schultz resigned? And the Burlington Free Press has gone after WikiLeaks for releasing the emails. Should WikiLeaks be held more accountable, as the Burlington Free Press suggests? Should WikiLeaks be blamed for this email debacle at the DNC? Or is it simply a diversion, drawing attention away from what DNC personnel were trying to do to tip the scales in favor of Clinton? And lastly, if we get time, I'm presenting before the Vermont Government Restructuring and Operations Review Committee this afternoon because of my former role as Secretary of Administration, Secretary of Human Services. I want to give you a preview and see what you think. So that's what's happening today. It's going to be a busy week this week. We are piled up with guests this week, and it's fortunate that I've had the opportunity to have in studio with me Randy Brock, Republican Lieutenant Governor candidate. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning, Mike.
One of the things, we'll do some rapid-fire stuff here first, just to get these things out of the way. Trump, do you support him or not?
I'm going to vote for a Republican in November. It won't be Donald Trump.
Climate change, do you believe in climate change?
Yes, I do. I believe in climate change, but in Vermont, I believe in climate science, not political science.
What does that mean?
It means that in many cases, we do things that feel good and that don't necessarily make good sense in terms of actually accomplishing something to protect the climate versus damaging our local economy. We need to have that balance of the things that we do. They need to make sense, and they actually need to progress us ahead. I do believe in climate change. I'm not at all sure that some of the things that we're doing actually promotes protection of it.
Before I move on, one example of what you're talking about?
I'm talking about one of the issues of this first in the nation thing that we seem to have in Vermont. And one of the problems about being first in the nation is we rush headlong to install the last century's technology to take us through the first half of this century, whereas in some cases, as we've seen with everything from cell phones to personal computers, the smart money sometimes waits a bit for the technology to advance further before installing it wholesale.
Let's go back to the rapid-fire questions. Pro-choice or pro-life?
Pro-choice.
Gun rights or gun control?
Gun rights.
What's the let's get off this rapid-fire sort of thing here. What is the number one issue, in your view, facing Vermont?
Jobs and the economy. There's no question in my mind that that's the issue. If you think about all of the problems that face Vermont, they can also be translated into opportunities. And most of those problems can be solved or at least addressed or partially controlled if we had a more vibrant economy. We all talk about the issue of our economy needing to be jump-started, needing to have more things in it that really promote opportunity for Vermonters, so that kids don't have to leave the state, so that there are jobs that are available, so that we can have money, because clearly the best poverty program is a job. That's the issue right now in Vermont. It's not just making Vermont affordable. Making it affordable, in my mind, means that people can live paycheck to paycheck. And what we really ought to be focused on, what I'm focused on in terms of what I do as a lieutenant governor, is to look at the long term, and that is how, over the next 5, 10, or 15 years, we can transform Vermont into having a vibrant economy.
As lieutenant governor, how would you do that?
I would talk an awful lot. I would involve people a lot. I would look for new and innovative ideas. And when I say new ideas, and again, thinking that first in the nation and putting it in the back of our mind, I want new old ideas. I want things that actually work, that we've demonstrated and we've seen that they've worked in other states and other nations, and say, how can we put a Vermont touch on them? How can we adapt them to make them work here? And then I would sell those ideas, sell it to people on all sides of the aisle, because these things, in many cases, are not partisan issues.
Do you have an example in mind?
Well, I have an example that we can look at as a current example. We have a captive insurance industry in Vermont. And a lot of people don't really know what the captive insurance industry is. But it's an industry that brings in money to Vermont from outside of Vermont. And that, again, is my focus, is to look for ideas that bring money into the state that don't come out of the that does not come out of the taxpayers' pockets. In captive insurance, we get about $32 million a year just in fee income alone. It employs about 1,400 people in high-paying jobs. There are other opportunities that I believe that we can introduce into Vermont that will accomplish those same kinds of things in niche industries that bring in significant amounts of tax revenue, that generate economic activity, and that create high-paying jobs. Financial services industry, the wealth transfer of the baby boomer generation, is a classic example of that, in which we can create instruments and products that take advantage of that potential transfer. There's a very long list, Mike, that include that idea and many others.
The number one issue, if you look at recent polls, Castleton Institute, for example, jobs and economy is number one issue. If you lump sort of the state budget and spending issues into that category, then you're talking about almost half of Vermonters view those as the top priorities. Let's go back to jobs and the economy that you're talking about. Don't we have a demographics issue here that makes that even more difficult?
Oh, sure we do. We're the 49th in the nation in terms of population growth for the last 2 years in a row. The only one worse than us is West Virginia, and I have always thought that once we close our coal mines, we're going to be at the bottom with West Virginia. We certainly do have. We're the second oldest state in New England, and this demographic of the 25 to 44-year-olds, that's the demographic that typically creates most of the work, the tax revenue, and that's falling. And we need to turn that around. And again, there are opportunities to do that. Let's take the information technology industry as a classic example, in which the state has shoveled money out to the hundreds of millions of dollars to foreign companies, to multinationals, who bring in some cases, people from outside of Vermont, people from outside of the country on H-1B and L-1 visas to do information technology work, say, in support of things like Vermont Health Connect. And those are opportunities to bring more people to Vermont, to use the youth that we have graduating from school to better align our training programs with our upcoming and ongoing and needs that we know about for the future, but also to bring people into Vermont, including some immigrants, as permanent residents as opposed to people who pass through on a contract-to-contract basis. We've got more than $700 million in information technology needs over the next decade, just replacing our existing legacy state systems. And that is a tremendous opportunity to deal with small and growing companies within Vermont to figure out how to weld them together and integrate some of the work that they do some of this work.
As Lieutenant Governor of State Budget, we just had a rescission that went on yesterday, actually, in the state budget. As Lieutenant Governor, you preside over the Senate. What would you do to make sure that spending's under control?
Well, Lieutenant Governor has a role, obviously, to influence policy through the bully pulpit. As Lieutenant Governor, though, I believe Lieutenant Governor needs to preside over the Senate with fairness and impartiality. And I think that's a critical need. Where the Lieutenant Governor plays a role, obviously, is in a tie vote. And hopefully we'll have a legislature that may have more tie votes than we've had over the past 8 years.
Who do you admire most as a Lieutenant Governor?
I admire in particular those Lieutenant Governors, the five of them that we've had in Vermont history, who suddenly had to rise to the level of governor. When our first governor, Thomas Chittenden, died in office in 1797, his lieutenant governor had to step up to be governor. And we've seen that happen, as I mentioned, five times. The most recent is when Governor Dick Snelling died suddenly and Howard Dean had to assume that role. It's a transition that every lieutenant governor does not want to have to make, but it's one that we all have to be prepared for and to ensure that we can do the job if needed.
Are you prepared to be governor?
I think so, but I'll leave that to the voters to decide. But I certainly have a lot of experience in a lot of areas. I've been an entrepreneur. I've been a senior officer of a major corporation. I've worked overseas in business development and other activities that many have not. I've headed a branch of state government as state auditor, so I've actually had state employees working for me, which most of the other candidates for either governor or lieutenant governor, with a few exceptions, have not. And so I've seen a lot of things, and clearly I've served in the legislature. I've served in the Senate, so I know what the lieutenant governor's office does, and I know how to do it.
Let's turn to the issue of health care. You've heard a lot of talk about single payer. You've heard a lot of people talking about single payer. Let's take all the issues off the table with health care, which is quite an enormous task right now. But let's take those off. If you could design a system that included affordability, access, and quality, what would it look like?
That's an excellent question, Mike. And sitting down with a blank piece of paper designing a system, you could design something that's simple and that has all of the appearance of something that makes a great deal of sense. But until you vet it, until you talk to the people involved, until you study it, until you see has this been done anyplace else before, and what are the unintended consequences? And that's what we do so often in Vermont, is we design something that looks great to us, that we feel really, really good about, and we don't always think through the unintended consequences. But all of that being said, I'm hesitant to throw out the baby with the bathwater and say, well, let's start all over again and let's do something entirely different that's never been done before. You know, we've tried that, and you see how it's worked out. It hasn't worked out well. We are concentrating, I think, on the wrong area. We're concentrating constantly on how we pay for health care. We're not concentrating on the real important point, how do we reduce the cost of health care? I believe that we should be hunting with a rifle and not with a shotgun. I think we should be identifying the discrete elements that cause health care costs to be as high as they are, and one by one, tackling them. tackling them in ways in which we deal with specific problems rather than say we're going to tear down the entire system, we're going to rebuild it from scratch in a model that's never been done before. And we start out by saying this will save us $500 million a year. Remember Dr. Shao? Wasn't long ago. And then it got down to, well, we'll maybe save $100 million a year. Then, well, I don't know if we're going to save anything. Then we're going to reduce the cost or the rate of increase in healthcare growth. And we see we now have the highest healthcare cost in the country. And we've been studying this. We've been fooling around with this for years. And it's had a devastating effect on our economy. We've created an uncertainty that makes it such that people don't want to put jobs in Vermont and don't want to grow the jobs that are here. We've had an effect on our healthcare providers. People who are doctors and dentists don't want to come to Vermont because they don't know what we're going to do tomorrow. We need to get stability in what we're doing as a start. We need to open our market, which is another issue, and that we can talk about extensively.
So let me assume out of that, what you just said, that you're not a proponent of single payer. You're more of a proponent of a healthcare system that involves both insurance companies and the government.
Yes. I think that's that is a fair statement. I mean, clearly, this is a market that has to be well regulated. It has to be well and sensibly regulated on the one hand, but at the same time, it cannot stifle innovation and competition. You know, you look at every industry in America that's grown over the past 100 years, innovation, competition have been part of it. You look at technology, and healthcare is very, very technologically driven, and I still have a great deal of trouble understanding why. Every time I go into a big box store and I'm confronted with the large screen TVs in front of me, every single time I go in, the screens are bigger and the price has gone down. And that is true with every industry in America that's innovated, except healthcare.
The biggest hit from opponents on you is that you are sometimes rigid, sometimes stubborn. How do you respond to that?
I don't find myself stubborn. My wife does. But I think it's important that when you have strong beliefs, that you defend those beliefs. And you defend them vigorously, but at the same time, you keep an open mind and an open door. And I think that people who know me on both sides of the aisle say that I do both.
Ethics Commission, do we need one?
We have 180 boards and commissions in Vermont, appointed by the governor and others. So often these are dedicated people who try to do a great job doing what they do. Often they are volunteers and they meet once a month. And if you want to delay getting anything done, I absolutely guarantee you, form a commission or a board, because that's a guaranteed way to make sure that things proceed at a snail's pace. Now, our legislature is required by the Constitution to handle its own rules, including ethics rules. You can't discipline a member of the Senate or a member of the House for ethics violations. Only those bodies do, and they need to have ethics committees, which they do both in the Senate and the House. For the executive branch, we have an attorney general. We have a secretary of state. We have a state auditor. All of them have oversight responsibilities, and you know what? We actually pay them. Why don't we pay people to do their jobs? But in both cases, both in the legislature and in the executive branch, we need rules. We need clear guidelines so that people know where the limits are, know what they're supposed to do, know what they can't do, and then let's use the people who have jobs, who are responsible for oversight, to actually do their doggone jobs.
What is your we're turning to energy now, just looking at industrial wind development on the ridgelines and also industrial solar development. What's your position on those?
I'm concerned about our energy policy overall, and I think I alluded to it a little bit earlier. I'm concerned that we are moving at headlong pace because of what essentially is a gold rush, because of subsidies and so on, to institute technologies that may not be the best technologies. I remember I used to go back and forth to Boston every day to work on an airplane, you know, leave in the morning, fly down, fly back at night. I did that for about 15 years. In my early years, I used to carry a portable computer. That portable computer that I first carried was a compact computer that weighed 30 pounds and would barely fit under the seat of an airplane. I'm concerned that we're installing compact computers on our ridge lines all over Vermont. And in just a few years, just like the cell phones that we carried 10 years ago, will be obsolete. And by being first in the nation, we're going to be worst in the nation. I believe a more deliberate pace makes much more sense. In terms of industrial wind, I'm very concerned about the gold rush that puts interstate-sized highways up the side of our mountains, about the ecological effect of that, and particularly, as I've seen in places like Georgia and Lowell and Sheffield, the human effect. I've seen grown men come into hearings with tears in their eyes because of the effect of these technologies on them, on their families, on their property values. We need to be much more sensitive to that and to say to ourselves, is it time to stand by on industrial wind and rethink this?
The EPA says we've got to invest more into protecting Lake Champlain, millions, maybe hundreds of millions into Lake Champlain. Where do you stand on that?
We have to fix Lake Champlain. We have to adopt common sense measures to eliminate the amount of runoff of pollution from all sources going into the lake, and we have to have a logical cleanup. I've not seen, though, measures that I think we really know how to clean up Lake Champlain. I know that we have to invest a lot of money, but I see a great deal of conflict in what it is that we have to do. But we do, in fact, have to do it. We have to begin setting aside money. And we have to recognize that the lake represents a significant economic resource to our state. And as such, we have to protect it.
Why should Vermonters vote for you?
Well, because first of all, in the primary, I'm unopposed.
Well, let's it'll be a general election after August 9th.
In a general election, it's because I'm the only candidate that is focused on giving Vermont money, money that comes not from the taxpayer's pocket. I'm the only candidate who wants to add money to the pie and not spend money. I'm the only candidate who is focused on doing things that actually will, in fact, grow the economy as opposed to spending additional money at rates that are unsustainable. I'm the only candidate who has voted against in the legislature increasing our budget by 5% every year when our economy is growing at 2.5%. I'm the only candidate who has actually had the experience and the breadth of experience both in the public sector and in the private sector to handle a job of this magnitude.
Want to go to the phone lines. I got about a minute, Bill. So, Bill from Barrie, you're on with Randy Brock.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning, Bill.
From what I understand, or from what I have noticed and observed, you and Phil Scott are on the same page with just about everything, and I really admire you both. I think, this is my opinion, you and he could get along great if he was governor and you were lieutenant governor, and you could do a lot for the state, and I'd like you to comment on that.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you very much. Phil Scott is a good friend of mine. I would absolutely enjoy serving in office with Phil. I think our skills complement each other. Bruce Listman is also a good friend of mine, and I would enjoy working with Bruce. And so I think we have two great candidates for governor. I think both are eminently qualified, and I would absolutely support either of them.
Thank you, Randy Brock.
Thank you, Mike.
Randy Brock, Republican Lieutenant Governor. Republican Lieutenant Governor candidate coming up in the general election because he's unopposed in the primary. Coming up, we'll speak with Secretary of State Jim Condos on the happenings at the Democratic National Convention and, more importantly, well, I'll keep it equal and important, the Vermont primary in August. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to have on the line from Philadelphia, Secretary of State Jim Condos. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. How are you, Mike?
I am fantastic, sir. Just if you would give us your impression of the first day of the Democratic National Convention.
Well, it was pretty exciting, to say the least. I mean, it started just a few minutes after 4:00. The gavel came down. We started having speakers almost immediately, and they went right until about 11 o'clock last night. We ended up with the triumvirate of Michelle Obama, Elizabeth Warren, and then Bernie Sanders. And, of course, Bernie brought the house down.
Do you think Bernie Sanders supporters have a point that the system is rigged after all the leaked emails seem to confirm their assertion.
Well, it's kind of interesting. We had someone from the Clinton campaign actually speak to the Vermont, Maine, and New Hampshire delegation for breakfast this morning, and it doesn't. I mean, yes, there were certainly, I think, problems with the whole system. I think Debbie Wasserman Schultz did the right thing by resigning. I think she did the right thing by not showing up last night to drop the gavel, which yesterday morning she said she was going to. And I think when she went to her own delegation's meeting, breakfast meeting yesterday, she found out that people weren't too happy with her. And it's one of those things where I'm not sure that I would say that the system was rigged, but I do think, I mean, this is party politics. The Republicans and the Democrats both have their rules that they have to follow, and in this case, one side got caught, and it doesn't look good on the party. I think we'll learn from this and move forward.
Do you think Bernie Sanders supporters are being, and you're one actually, you're a delegate to Bernie Sanders, do you think they're being ridiculous, as Sarah Silverman says, in their protest for Bernie?
I wouldn't go so far as to say ridiculous. I think they're not just being realistic at this point. And many of the supporters are young. Some of them are your age and my age, but some of them are young, and they've not really been involved in politics before. And I mean, as you know, Mike, you know, as long as we're moving forward on the issues that we believe in, we can start accomplishing good things. But if either side becomes rigid to the point where they will not budge, then that's when things don't happen. And that's what you see happening, as you know, down in Congress right now, where the two sides don't even talk to each other half the time, and you can't get anything done. The art of politics is the art of compromise.
Let me put you on the spot. Who was the best speaker last night?
I think hands down it was Michelle.
Yeah, I thought that was a good answer.
and I would say that Bernie was close behind.
You are a seasoned politician there, pal. And what's today look like for you, Jim?
Today, well, we're good. There's a lot of, you've been to a convention before, right?
I haven't, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, for me, this is my first, but today there's a bunch of caucuses going on for different, you know, the Women's Caucus, the LGBT caucus, the rural caucus. So there's a bunch of caucuses going on. We're about 20 minutes to a half hour outside of Philly, so we have a bus that goes up to Philly. Most of us are going to get on the bus this morning, get up there, go to some of these caucus meetings. I have a meeting with a group that supports automatic voter registration as one of the four states that passed it this past year. So I'll be going to that, and then we'll go to the convention around 4 o'clock. The gavel drops each day at around 4 o'clock, and it goes until about 11 at night.
Jim, what do you hope will be the outcome of the convention?
I think like anybody at this point, your hope is that the party unifies behind your candidate. And I think that for the most part, we will be unified behind the Democratic candidate.
And besides the nominee who speaks on Thursday night, who else are you looking forward to listening to?
Well, tonight we have Bill Clinton. Tomorrow night we have Barack Obama will be here. So there's a lot of really good speakers coming in, and it's also very fluid. It can change on a moment's notice. So you get an update every morning of who's going to speak. And then, for instance, like this morning we had Howard Dean was here at our hotel to speak to the Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine delegations. Andy Kutcher from New Hampshire, as well as Gene Shaheen, were here as well. Tomorrow, Patrick Leahy and Bernie will be here. So, you know, we have we had different speakers coming, like, for the breakfast meeting, and when we, and security is tight. I mean, I've never seen so many police officers in my life. God bless them. They have a tough job, and you know, the whole complex is cordoned off. You go through security to get in, so it's pretty tight. Every day we get our credentials to be able to get in. They don't give it to you for the week. You have to be around in the morning to pick up your credential for that day. So it's a pretty detailed, it's kind of nightmarish to think about the how much operationally they have to do.
Jim, turning in a moment, I want to turn to the Vermont August 9th primary, but I'll take a short break. I'll be right back with you. We're speaking with Secretary of State Jim Condos. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. When we come back, we'll talk about there's a primary in August in Vermont. August 9th is the primary day. Want to talk to Secretary of State Jim Condos about that primary. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're speaking with Secretary of State Jim Condos, and we're turning to the subject of the August 9th primary. Jim, why is it so early?
Well, the big reason is that in 2012, let me back up a little further. We used to have it as the second Tuesday of September, and we had to move it because we needed more time to process. And after 2009, processed the military and overseas votes, which the ballots to be sent out, because there was a federal law change in 2009 for overseas and military, so which moved it to 45 days before the election. So in order to do that, we had to have enough time to be able to process, and they moved it to the fourth Tuesday of August. We ran the election in 2010. It was essentially the Department of Justice gave Vermont a pass in 2010. We actually were late getting, this is prior to my taking over, we were late getting ballots out to meet that deadline. And then in 2012, it happened again. But the reason, in both cases, it was because we had recounts of statewide races. And when we got done the recount, and then the court approved the final results, and ordered us, gave us the order that allowed us to print ballots, prepare and print the ballots, we had 3.5 days to get them ready for the town clerks. So we missed, I shouldn't say we, the town clerks missed on about 200 of the 800 early vote ballots that had to go out on that Saturday before on the 45th day. As a result of that, the Department of Justice sued Vermont, and one of the stipulations that they, in the court order that settled the case with the Department of Justice, which, by the way, was settled in 5 days once they filed the lawsuit, we at that point had agreed that we would go to the legislature and get them to move the date even earlier. Now, I had gone to the legislature, and I asked them to move it to mid-June. I said, at least in mid-June, it's before people really start taking vacations, and that would be a much better timeline. The legislature did not want to do that because they felt that if they did, it would interfere with essentially the end of the session. It would mean that they'd be campaigning while they were still in session. So we ended up agreeing that the second Tuesday of August would be the date. Now, on top of that, it is also important to note there was a New York State federal court decision when New York got sued before us. And in that decision, the court actually moved their primary, the statewide primary, I'm sorry, the federal primary, from they had it at the time in September and moved it back to a specific date. They picked June 26th and then told the legislature in the order that if they moved it from June 26th, they would have to move it no earlier than 80 days before the election, the general election. Well, 80 days before the general election falls on about August 15th. So the original plan was after they rejected June. They then looked at around the August 15th timeline, but then the town clerks came out and said, hey, that's going to be our first property tax payment date, so that would really be an interference for us. So the legislature moved it to the second Tuesday, but it moves it back to the, in this case, this year, it's August 9th. So that's the history behind how we got to where we are. The good news is that with 45 days of early vote, the voters have an opportunity to request and actually vote 45 days ahead of time, which falls around June 24th. I don't have the exact date in front of me, but it was around June 24th was the start of early vote period. So people have plenty of time to vote, and we've been putting out press releases to the press over the last couple of months to just remind them to remind voters that they are able to vote early.
And if you want to vote, Jim, you go to your town clerk's office, correct?
Well, there's several ways you can do it. First of all, let me just say that if you need to register to vote, or if you're not sure, you can actually go online to our elections website, and there's a place that it's actually called My Voter Page. And when you go to the My Voter Page, you click on the button for My Voter Page, and that button will take you to a page and will say, do you want to know if you're registered already? You put in some specific information personal to you, and it'll tell you if you are registered and where. And if you're not, then it'll say, do you want to register? And you can actually register online now. It's a pretty simple form. We actually follow the same format of the form that you would have to fill out. Or you can download the application, fill it out, and then get it to your town clerk. Or you can actually go into the town clerk's office and do it right there. The end of the voter registration period is 5 p.m. on August 3rd, which is the Wednesday before the actual primary date of August 9th. As far as absentee ballots, you can actually, through the My Voter page, once you're registered here in Vermont, we have a unique system that is pretty unique at this point. I think we may have been the first state that actually adopted this, but we call it My Voter page. You can actually go online to see, it's a personal web page for voting purposes, and you can actually see, like for instance, it'll give you your information of where you live, when was your registration date, is your status active, what's your Senate and House districts, or ward or school district. It'll tell you your polling place. You can actually get a Google map if you're not familiar with the area. You can also get all the elections information, including you can get a copy of the sample ballot for the Democratic, Progressive, and Republican ballot. Tells you who your town clerk is, how to contact them, and you can actually order your absentee ballot right online from your My Voter page, which again is unique to each individual voter. So you can and you can track it from the time that you ordered your ballot to the time it was sent out by the town clerk to the time they received it back and whether it was considered accepted or not. So it's actually pretty unique. So the dates to remember are: voter registration closes at 5 p.m. on August 3rd, Wednesday, August 3rd. Absentee ballot requests have to be completed requested by the end of the day on August 8th, which is the day before. The caveat is if you call in and ask for one or you do it online, probably won't get it in time because they're going to mail it to you. So if you're going to do it on that Monday before, I would recommend that you walk into your town clerk's office and do it right there. All ballots have to be in by mail or by actual votes. Have to be in by 7 p.m. on Tuesday, August 9th.
And we're sitting here, and I'm just looking at a calendar. August 3rd is next Wednesday, so it's fast
That's
approaching.
Right. It's fast approaching.
Hey, Jim, many experts predict that it will be a low turnout. What are you trying to do to boost the turnout?
The fact that I'm on this show with you talking about it today, we've put out press releases, we've sent out information online, we're tweeting it, we got it on our Facebook page, we're trying to get it out as much as we can. We're hoping that the media will help us out by doing it as a public service and try to get people to vote. I know that the individual parties are doing, and candidates are actually doing voter turnout as well. You know, everybody says it's going to be a low turnout. I have no idea. I mean, I can tell you that it was pretty low last year or 2 years ago in 14, but it was higher in 12, and it was even higher in 2010. The good news as far as for turnout basis, I think, will be that we have, on the Republican side, you've got a contested race for governor. On the Democratic side, you've got a contested race for both governor and lieutenant governor. So I think, you know, that will generate some activity as well. You can also, I think, did I mention you can also get sample ballots on through your My Voter page if you want to see what the ballot looks like before.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing, Michael, is that we have I don't know how I want to put it. Never mind, I forgot.
Okay. But
get back to it.
I haven't forgotten about this, which is your opinion. The primaries and the general election, the primaries in particular, are a very expensive proposition for governor and lieutenant governor this year. And it looks like on both sides, whether Democrat or Republican, it looks like candidates for lieutenant governor, including any outside groups like the Republican Governors Association or Democratic Governors Association, this may be a $4 million governor's race this year when you add it all together. Is this the new normal?
I'm afraid to say that it may possibly be. You know, we really haven't had the influence of outside money for until about, I don't know, I think it was 4 years ago when it really first started to come up, but at least in a strong way. But right now, I think we will have, not so much for the lieutenant governor's race, but I think we will have for both the governor's, for the governor's race, there will be a lot of money spent, and a lot of it is not within our control, so to speak. So we'll see. You know, the campaign finance laws were changed. Everything, by the way, on campaign finance is now online 100%. When I took office, it was 0% online. Now it's all online. People can see it immediately when on filing deadline day, right from your desktop or even your smartphone. You can go to the campaign finance website and check out who's giving money to who and how is the money being spent. So there's a lot of things that we've done to make use of technology to improve disclosure for Vermonters and other citizens, and as well as for the media and candidates. So, you know, there's a lot of information out there. Oh, the thing I wanted to say before was when a voter goes into the polling place or even gets their ballot in online, I mean through mail, they will be sent three ballots. They will be given three ballots, a Democratic, Progressive, and Republican ballot. If the voter is allowed to fill out one ballot and discard the other two, nobody knows which one you're filling out, and nobody knows which one you're discarding, and there's no record of it. There's a lot of misconceptions out there. The only race that the voter actually has to ask for a party ballot is the presidential primary, which already is only happens every 4 years. It's once every 4 years, and at that time, the clerk is required to keep track of who's polling which ballot. It doesn't mean you're a member of a party. It just means that this is the ballot you took. And as you know, Mike, Vermont is an open state, so we do not register by party in Vermont. No, nobody. I laugh when I hear people say, "Well, I'm a registered Republican," and I'll say, "Really?" I said, "Where did you register?" Because we don't register by party here. We're open, and anybody can vote in any party.
Got about a couple of minutes, 2 minutes actually, and we're speaking with Secretary of State Jim Condos. Jim, just a quick update. Ethics Commission, where are we on that?
Well, I think, you know, I think that the legislature just didn't have time this year. By the time the Senate passed something and sent it over to the House, there was only a couple weeks left in the session, and they had other bills that had taken precedent before that. It was a step. What had passed the Senate was a step in the right direction. I would like to see a much more strong ethics commission bill created or passed. I'm going to continue to push for that. I'm also going to push. We've been having a lot more discussions, as you probably know, regarding open meeting law and access to public records. So I think there's a way that we can combine all of this into one package that will just really make sense for Vermont.
And if voters wanted to find out more of where to vote, how to vote, what's the website again?
Well, you go to SOS. I'm sorry. It's sec.state.vp.us. If you just punch in Vermont Secretary of State's office, if you Google it, it'll come right up. And then you go to the elections tab, and from there, depending on what you're looking for, you can work your way through it, or you can watch the billboard, so to speak, at the top. We'll go through for voter registration, for whatever, absentee ballots, and you can get all this information. The real, I think, saver is the My Voter page, because the My Voter page is unique to each registered voter. And if you're not a registered voter, you can register online or go to your town clerk's office to register.
Hey, thanks, Jim. I know you're busy there in Philly, so thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, you're welcome, and I just want to add one last thing, and that is your vote is your voice.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Jim. That was Secretary of State Jim Condos, and we're talking about voting on August 9th. Coming up, Talk Media News, and then Kyle Madura, WCAX political reporter. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV News Radio on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. 85 years, WDEV News Radio, celebrating the future. WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond, and of course, streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. I'm Mike Smith. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. Coming up, Talk Media News, and then Kyle Madura, WCAX political reporter. One of the things I want to do now is turn our attention to national issues. We have been discussing national issues, particularly the convention, and on the line is Bob Ney, our colleague at Talk Media News. Bob, good morning.
Good morning. I'm here at the convention, and having served in Congress with Bernie Sanders, I can tell you that it's been amazing watching this whole thing.
And that's what I was going to sort of ask you right out of the blocks. What was your impression of the first day?
Oh, the Sanders people did not come here angry. They came here in anger.
Mm-hmm.
I would safe to say that no Sanders supporter will name their child Debbie for 30 years, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I've never seen a furor build so fast. They felt it was rigged, it was stolen. And obviously, they were very vocal anytime Hillary Clinton's name was mentioned, but it calmed down a bit. But I've got to tell you, it's not gone.
Okay. Do you think that, and that was my second sort of question, do you think Bernie Sanders have, the supporters have a point that the system is rigged? After all, the emails kind of confirm that, doesn't it?
Look, I'm a former Republican member of Congress. I do radio. I'm fair about everything. But I sat there last night knowing what I know, and I'm looking at this thing, and I'm thinking Bernie could have been there Thursday night accepting the nomination. And now, that's not for sure, but take away superdelegates, how they were maneuvered, and this whole Debbie Wasserman Schultz and a Saturday night debate so nobody could see them before Christmas. And I'm sorry, but I don't know if he could have won, but it was surely maneuvered to make sure he wouldn't win.
One of the things I'm curious about is that Sarah Silverman last night said Bernie Sanders supporters stop being ridiculous, basically. And I guess it was a way of saying, please shut up. Did that have an impact?
I held my breath when I gasped, because first of all, yeah, it was, they really got stirred up. It was a terrible comment to make. You know, they've been told this before. It was terrible. The other thing is, I watched the Democrat National Committee had these security guards who demanded the Sanders signs away from them and told some of them, if you don't give us the signs, we're taking away your credentials to be here this week. You won't come into the arena. Why would you want to do that? You know, they have a Sanders sign. So what?
Do you expect this sort of demonstration, these Sanders supporters, to continue protesting what they believed was a rigged election?
I am. Nobody's here yet. I am. Every Sanders supporter, I want to talk to them, and I want to come in. I want to know what they're thinking. But look, the vice presidential choice, Kane, is just going to infuriate this all again, because the TPP trade bill is, you know, we think education is a top issue with Sanders people. It's the TPP trade bill. And they don't like it. And I've got to tell you, Mike, it might settle down a little bit. I don't think it's going to go away. And, you know, forget this convention after this. If she loses, Hillary Clinton loses 25% of those voters alone, or 30%, she could be in trouble against Trump.
One of the things I'm curious about was this diversion saying this is all a Russian conspiracy, a Trump-Russian conspiracy. I know that's sort of an attempt to sort of deflect what's going on. After all, Putin or Trump didn't write those emails. Is that effective at all?
No, I have a very strong opinion on this, by the way. Do I think the Russians hacked it? Yes, I do. I do. Now, here's the problem. Hillary Clinton's campaign manager started down the path that Paul Manafort, Trump's campaign manager, you know, has this relationship with Russia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? And people may not know this, but Hillary Clinton gave a $500,000 speech in Moscow. This uranium company gave several million dollars to the Clinton Foundation, and the State Department gave some assistance to them, all right? Now, having said that, one could say that a company that was trying to get contracts is very angry at Hillary, and maybe they went against her. So this whole Russian thing, maybe they hacked it, but they better drop this, you know, Trump did it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going nowhere. It's deflecting the fact that, you know, Russia didn't make Debbie write things about somebody being, well, the other guy wrote it about being Jewish, and gee, they may not accept that, but they really won't accept atheists. You know, you can't do that.
Yeah, it was fairly revealing. The other part that I thought was revealing is the close relationship with the media, actually.
You know, having served in Congress, and it's gotten worse since I was there, there are so many deals that I think are being cut these days. And, you know, they're calling, they're mad at Morning Joe, and they're going to tell her to stop it, Mika, and all these things. It's very obviously a lot of underground communication between media and these political personalities. Republicans do it too, but they're better with their emails.
Bob, I've got 1 minute left. What does Clinton have to do on Thursday night?
I think she has to give the speech completely of her political lifetime. She better be sincere. She better look the part. She better have the right eye movements, the right verbal movements, not just the right language. She's got to appeal to the Bernie people as much as she does the rest of the nation. This is going to be a close election.
Bob, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Bob Ney from Talk Media News. Coming up, Kyle Madura, WCAX political reporter. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're waiting on Kyle Madura, WCAX political reporter, on an update from the Democratic National Convention. As soon as he calls in, we'll turn to that. But you know what? Let's take some of your phone calls if you have an opinion on what happened yesterday at the Democratic National Convention. I'm particularly interested in your perspective of whether Sarah Silverman's message to Bernie Sanders supporters of stop being ridiculous is one that was appropriate, or one, as a Bernie supporter, did you think you were being ridiculous? And number two, will you stop and now get in line and support Hillary Clinton? And the other question I had as I look at the convention, Should Debbie Wasserman Schultz resigned over the emails? The question is, did the DNC have their foot on the scales with the emails? And the emails show that, yeah, they did. And what impact did that have on the election? Be very interested in your sort of analysis, your comments, your opinions on this. One of the other things that I've seen been happening is that WikiLeaks are being blamed. The Russians are being blamed. No doubt, probably the Russians did hack the accounts. There's rumors that they hacked the Trump Organization as well. The question is, they didn't write those emails. So I'd be very interested in Sarah Silverman's message, stop being ridiculous, and whether that was the appropriate message to give to Bernie Sanders supporters. Let's go to Rama in Williamstown. Rama, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. I think telling people who supported the campaign of Bernie Sanders to stop being ridiculous is ridiculous on the face of itself, considering that now everything that everybody really suspected with plenty of grounds beforehand has been proven irrefutably true, that the DNC and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and other bigwigs at the DNC had deliberately been stacking the deck against Sanders is true. It's not a matter of they were being ridiculous. It's a matter of now of saying, hey, look, we're sorry, this was really stupid, we're going to change the organization to reflect what should have happened. And that's what is not really happening right now. The truth is, a lot of people should have been fired from the DNC. Wasserman Schultz should have been banned from the convention, not on the morning of the convention start, but well before the convention started. Hillary Clinton should not be bringing her on as an honorary chairwoman of her campaign. You know, it's all of these things that people are saying, oh, gosh darn it, we got caught. Now, how can we not really change things and mollify people? And that's what I don't think should happen. And I personally think these people that are angry about how the DNC acted should stay angry about how the DNC acted until it's proven, just as irrefutably as it was proven that the DNC stacked the deck in Hillary Clinton's favor, that it has to be proven irrefutably that that problem has been fixed beyond a shadow of a doubt. You do that, you will bring people along. But if you think people are going to just sit there and blindly follow an organization that refuses to make the changes necessary in order to become a more honest, open, and inclusive organization, that's not going to happen. That's the surest path to having all these people voting for Stein or for Johnson. Trump isn't going to get these votes.
Thanks, Rama, for your phone call. Rama makes a good point. I mean, why haven't more people been fired? I mean, there were several people that were involved in that email exchange dealing with Bernie Sanders' religion and using it against him, particularly in the South, in southern states, in southern primaries. Why aren't these people being fired, and why wasn't Debbie Wasserman Schultz fired in the beginning? Those are good questions. What's your comments? And the comment of Sarah Silverman telling Bernie supporters, stop being ridiculous. If you're a Bernie supporter, how did you take that? Be interested in your phone calls. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 1-877-291-8255. How did you take it? If you're a Bernie Sanders supporter out there, how did you view what happened with the Democratic National Committee? And did you support the sort of protests that went on? Or should the protesters just move on? That they're young, that they maybe don't understand the system, that they should move on. Be interested in your phone calls. The other thing in this whole development that I've been interested in is the attempt to sort of shift the blame. To shift the blame to WikiLeaks or shift the blame to the Russians. And let's not minimize that these emails were hacked and probably hacked by a foreign country. That's a whole different issue. But the foreign country didn't write the emails. The foreign country didn't develop the strategy to undermine Bernie Sanders. So be interested in your opinion. Did Sarah Silverman's message to Bernie supporters stop being ridiculous? Do you agree with that? Or don't you agree with that? 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. And should have Debbie Wasserman Schultz resigned? Your opinion at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. You know what we'll do? We'll just take your phone calls from now to the top of the hour. We're going to roll this along. Kyle Maduro must have got tied up at the convention. So we'll do that. We'll come back from a break and we'll take your phone calls. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention. And last night, Sarah Silverman, who is a comic, told Bernie Sanders supporters to stop being ridiculous. They were chanting for Bernie while she was on. And I'm wondering, if you're a Bernie supporter, how'd you feel about that? Second, should Debbie Wasserman Schultz resigned? Be really interested in your thoughts on what happened yesterday and last night at the convention. Let's go to Ken in Ticonderoga. Ken, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Hey, Mike. Silverman, yeah, telling people to stop being ridiculous, that's usually not a good tactic. That's like telling people to don't be excited. You settle down. There's a no-win situation.
It's kind of a pat on the head sort of thing?
Yeah. The bottom line is ridiculous is endorsing Clinton. She absolutely the antithesis of everything that Bernie stands for. So I'm going to take a walk. Green is the new blue. Hello, Jill Stein.
Do you think a lot of Bernie supporters, because, Ken, I'm presupposing you were a Bernie supporter, do you think that a lot of people like yourself are going to be going to Jill Stein, who's the Green Party candidate, by the way?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been a thesis after they'll write them in. You can write in 43 states and have it count. But the long and short of it is endorsing Clinton is a no-go for me. For somebody who tries to subvert the election, commits election fraud, and does everything she can to subvert democracy, to endorse her? No, I don't think so. No, we'll go green is the new blue because, you know, I've supported Bernie since his first mayoral run in Burlington when I lived there in the mid-'80s and followed him ever since. But I will not follow him to Clinton.
Thanks, Ken, for your phone call. Let's go to Lynette in Greensboro, Ben. Lynette, good morning.
Hi. Boy, I really agree with the gentleman that just called up. I promised myself back when there were rumors about Debbie Wasserman doing all this stuff, and I thought she'd resigned. I thought she was done. She hasn't resigned.
Well, she has resigned after the convention. She has not taken up any speaking roles now.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, she got booed at her own
Florida. Yeah.
Breakfast from the people from Maine. Basically, what I want to say is my husband keeps going, but you have to vote for her because look at what the consequences are otherwise. You know, I didn't make them cheat. And, you know, Hillary seems to be, you know, the ends justify the means. Why isn't she trusted? You know, they could have played this all by the rules and come out with whatever the answer was, whatever the conclusion was, but that's not what they did. And I say they've shot themselves in the foot. If they lose, it's not my fault. You know, they did this stuff. They didn't have to, but that's the game that they're playing, and I can't be behind it. I just can't. I would have called this my convention or our convention any other time in my life. It's got nothing to do with me. That's just the way I feel about it. You know, I won't take the blame for the outcome of this election because, man, I think until something horrible happens, they're just not going to take it seriously.
Lynette, thank you very much for your phone call. We've been talking about the Democratic National Convention and yesterday's sort of happenings with the Bernie Sanders supporters having a real tough time, as Ken and Lynette had talked about, having a real tough time coming to grips with Hillary Clinton, and on the heels of the email controversy, which caused the resignation of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. But one of the things I'm asking this morning is that Sarah Silverman's message to Bernie Sanders supporters is stop being ridiculous. And I'm wondering, is that a message that resonates with you if you're a Bernie supporter? Because of that message, are you stepping in line and supporting Clinton? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255 if you have a comment or an opinion or a question. Let's go to Tom and Barry. Tom, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Mike. You know what? I think what's lost in all of this is what a Trump victory could actually mean for this country in the perspective of the Supreme Court. That man, if he gets in there, would probably has for sure one nominee and more than likely would end up with two in his first 4 years. And we're talking about the repeal of Roe versus Wade, never getting rid of that Citizens United thing, and who knows what the court will do under a Trump thing. And it's like the lesser of the two evils.
And, Tom, what do you think the impact on the Bernie Sanders supporters is going to be by this convention? Do you think they'll flock to Clinton?
Well, I don't know if they'll flock, but I'm afraid that they don't. I think it's going to give Trump the victory. And I just, like I said, go back to that Supreme Court thing, and a lot of people aren't thinking of that. That'd be a lifetime of sorrow for a lot of us, of immigrants and everybody, if he gets to appoint at least two people to that Supreme Court. You have a great week, Mike.
Okay, Tom, thank you for your phone call. Let's go to Rob in North Carolina. Rob, you're on open mic. Rob, I've got only a few minutes here until I have to take a break, so can we get right to the point?
Well, there's a lot of points to be made, and you know, the Democrats are going to coalesce around Hillary, and it's got a shaky start yesterday. But, you know, I'm here in North Carolina, and it's one of the toss-up states. You know that, right, Mike?
I do.
And I listened to Michelle Obama, a great speech, but, you know, I think we know where they're heading here. It's about the children. I think the children and the kids was mentioned dozens and dozens of times last night. And here in North Carolina, we're being inundated with Hillary Clinton ads. And they go like this, Mike. They show Trump at his worst when he kind of made fun of the New York Times guy who had a disability. They show Trump saying, I could have shot him in the street and they still would support me. And all the while, they're showing the faces of little children watching this, okay? The worst of Trump in those earlier days. And then at the end, it says, we want our children watching this. Mike, that is being played day and night here over and over. Now, if Hillary Clinton doesn't want the kids to see this stuff, it's obviously she's using this. And so it's just, you know, so hypocritical of her to do this here in North Carolina.
But let me ask you this, Rob. I mean, if I was going against Donald Trump, I'd use everything that he said. Why wouldn't a candidate do that, just out of curiosity?
A number of times at that convention last night, they said, We don't take the low road. We don't go low. When they go low, we go high. That's not going high, and that's hypocritical, Mike. That's just trying to exploit the worst and highlight the worst. And again, Mike, to keep showing this over and over with these kids watching the worst of Donald Trump, why isn't Hillary Clinton out there talking more about what she'll do for the children rather than what Donald Trump might offend the children or scare the children? He's much more than that. So if they're going to really go high, I would say cut that ad out. It's ridiculous. It's just a bad scene, Mike.
Both sides aren't going high in this election. I can tell you that. And my advice to the Trump campaign, if they don't want things to be used, and by the way, my advice to the Clinton campaign, if they don't want things to use, don't say it. And that is that's the bottom line. Rob, thank you for your phone calls. What we're doing today is we're listening to you and your phone calls about the Democratic National Convention, its first day, the sort of ruckus in terms of the protests yesterday. And I'm very, very curious, if you're a Bernie supporter, what you took away from Sarah Silverman's message to Bernie supporters that said, stop being ridiculous. Do you feel that you are being ridiculous in your attempt to change, to protest? Basically, what she was saying is, stop it and get on board. And that's one of the things that it'll be interesting whether you as a Bernie supporter will say, stop it and get on board. Gene in Barrie. Gene, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. Can I give you my theory in a way?
Sure.
Why do you think people are going for Bernie and Trump? They're so enthused by both of them, because I think they're both independents, to tell the truth. They're not running for the true party that they are, because people are going for them because they're so different of running. They're not going Democrat or Republican. They've got their own way of what they want to do for the country.
But doesn't that tell you something, Gene, that maybe the country is looking for something different?
That's what I mean. And so, and they are different, you know, and that's what got people so enthused, that they're not satisfied the Democrat way or the Republican. They probably a lot aren't independent either, but their way is so different than what we're used to. They're not like the norm, I'd call it. So I think they think, of course, both of them got pretty good ideas, you know, both sides.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that's the thing right there. And as far as the Democrats picking Hillary, well, of course, she's a Democrat. They know Bernie isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think the people are so enthused with both. It's not Hillary so much. It's between, I think, Trump and Bernie, because they've been, got the people really enthused, because everything, they want it different, you know. They don't want the same old, same old. So what they're doing is listening to both of them, and they like their ideas.
Thanks, Gene. I appreciate the phone call. Let's go to Fred in Montpelier. Fred, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. As far as the comment about the being ridiculous, I've been a Bernie supporter for forever. When he used to run for everything and just stand out there by himself with one sign, and people considered him a kook. And he's come a long ways, and the battle is not over, but just begun. These people that want to vote their principles instead of voting for policy. You know, principles are nice, but policies even better. And to change, no, things don't change all at once. And I just think that more Bernie supporters are, you know, we're a long ways out from the election, and that more Bernie supporters will come around to supporting Hillary reluctantly, as I do.
Hey, Fred, thank you for your phone call. I appreciate it. We'll come back to your phone calls right after this. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention yesterday's sort of happenings. particularly interested in your views. If you're a Bernie supporter, or even if you're not, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 1-877-291-8255. Be interested in your perspective, particularly comedian Sarah Silverman's message to Bernie supporters yesterday. She basically said, get over it. She said, stop being ridiculous in terms of telling Bernie supporters to just calm down during the convention in which they were shouting out Bernie Sanders' name. Be interested in your opinion on that. Also, should have Debbie Wasserman Schultz, should she have resigned over this email controversy? And should others resign as well? We had a caller earlier that said that others should resign as well. Let's go back to the phone lines, and let's go to Harry in South Royalton. Harry, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Yes. I don't think it makes a tinker's difference who released the stuff. The fact of it is, it's there. And what Bernie was hollering about turns out to be true. I think that exists all through politics. And here is a woman who wants her thumb on the pulse of the country and understands everything about us and wants to be commander-in-chief. And when she's questioned about it, she sounds like Schultz on Hogan's Heroes. I don't keep up with that stuff. I know nothing. What is she paying attention to? Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Harry, for your phone call. One of the things that I'm particularly interested from those Bernie supporters that are out there is Sarah Silverman's message to stop being ridiculous. Are you being ridiculous in protesting, in continuing to support Bernie over Hillary Clinton at the Democratic National Committee? And one of the other things, we have Debbie Wasserman Schultz resigning after the convention. That will be on Friday as the chair of the Democratic National Committee. Should others resign as well? Be very interested in your opinions. Number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 1-877-291-8255. We've had a lot of opinions here in terms of what should be happening in terms of Bernie supporters. Let's go to Sam in Williston. Sam, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. It seems to me that they're all buying into the corrupt system. It is quite unbelievable that how the whole thing is corrupt. The media, the politicians, and how they roll over. They're just rolling over and marching in line. And I understand that there's a lot of people that don't like Trump and whatnot, but he's not part of that system, or really not part of the system, but he may have some toes in the water someplace. But these people are incredibly corrupt. And when you listen to some of these people speak there, Cory Booker really doesn't understand the Constitution of the United States by any stretch of the imagination. You should get tuned in. It's not government for government, you know, and this is what they want to bring you. Bigger, better, expensive government that will tell you everything you need to know and do.
Yeah, I've got an interesting question that sort of popped in my head from something that you said. Bernie Sanders was considered not part of the system as well. Donald Trump isn't, as you said earlier. Does this now make him, because he lined up with Hillary, part of the system, and does that help or hurt him with his supporters?
See something, say something, I think is the expression we're supposed to use for terrorism. If you see something, it's corrupt, and it's corrupt, you should say something. And I don't think you should be involved in something that's corrupt. If you did that in your business or what you did, how would you feel?
Mm-hmm. Sam,
individuals. We're all individuals.
Sam, thank you.
Corey Booker thinks we are individuals. I mean, to me, the corruption thing is just, it's sickening. It really is sickening to me.
I write
checks monthly and yearly to these people, and I'm sick of my money being used to take care of these corrupt people.
Thanks, Sam, for your phone call. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention, yesterday's sort of situation where Bernie Sanders supporters were very, very unhappy with what was going on at the National Convention. Particularly what upset them was the release of these emails, which showed that the Democratic National Committee had their foot on the scale in support of Hillary Clinton. And in some cases, were trying to employ dirty tricks on Bernie Sanders. In one case in particular, talking about his religion in the South, A, that he was Jewish, and B, that he was an atheist. They were going for the double hit on this in the South. So the question I have is twofold. One is, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is going to resign after the convention. Some of you said she should have resigned immediately. But should others resign, including those people who wrote these emails that rigged, as Bernie Sanders would say until recently, that rigged the system in favor of Hillary Clinton? And the other interesting thing that was said last night, and I'd be very interested in your response to this, is that comedian Sarah Silverman was up on the stage, and at one point during her sort of speech, Bernie Sanders supporters were chanting in support of Bernie Sanders over Hillary Clinton. And of course, Sarah Silverman, if she's up on the stage, she's supporting Hillary Clinton, although she used to be a Bernie supporter. And she said this. She said, "Stop being ridiculous to those that were chanting in support of Bernie Sanders." Are Bernie Sanders supporters being ridiculous? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 1-877-291-8255. I'll take your phone calls right to the top of the hour on this. I had another subject I was going to get to, but I don't think we have enough time, so let's take your phone calls. If you have an opinion, if you are a Bernie Sanders supporter in particular, I'd be very interested in what your thinking is after yesterday. Are you going to support Hillary Clinton and why? Or are you not going to support Hillary Clinton? And as a couple of callers said, they're going to support the Green Party candidate, which is Jill Stein. And I'd be very interested in your comments, your opinions, in terms of what you're going to do. Because clearly we saw the outrage from various people, especially Bernie Sanders supporters, over these leaked emails. Let's go to John in Callis. John, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. I've been kind of listening to you as I drive down the road here. I'm parked now, so.
Okay.
Anyways, you keep bringing up the Silverman and the callers. Nobody seems to want to comment about it, and I think that shows that most of us out here don't really care what actors, actresses, rock stars, we don't care about their thoughts. Sarah Silverman made her name by, you know, being a foul-mouthed comedian, and I really don't care what she says about Bernie or the rest of it. I think the Bernie supporters have a right to be angry. I mean, it just, and although Trump may be as crazy as people think, the only thing he's gotten right is crooked Hillary. Every time you turn around, she's done something else that's either illegal or skating on the edge. And for her to deny any knowledge of this, come on. You know, it's the whole system is just corrupt. And one of your callers mentioned that Bernie and Trump's support comes because we're fed up with it. It to me, the Republicans and the Democrats are circling the wagons because they don't want to give up their control over us, and outsiders threaten that control. And my final point would be, as disliked as Bernie is by the establishment, in the same way Ted Cruz was. Had he won the election, how much would he have been able to accomplish, you know, with everybody against him from the get-go? You know, would he be effective anyways? And the same, I guess you could say, for Trump. But it just, I as a voter in my early 50s, I'm sick to death of our political system. I've just had it.
John, thank you for the phone call. Great, great observations. Let's go to Jerry in Berlin. Jerry, you're on open mic. What's your opinion?
Well, actually, it's going to be really quick today because that man just said it all. In my opinion, I'm 61 years old, voted in this country for over, 30 years, and I'm sick to death with it. And I've been involved in politics for a long time, and I'm sick to death with it. I'm sorry, Mike. I like you.
No, go ahead.
How can you even care what some comedian says on the stage about anybody?
Because there was such
Saturday Night Live, is that what the Democratic Convention is? And
hey, Jerry,
you know what?
Jerry,
it's a lot of Hollywood going on in the Democratic Party.
I would say this: don't put her up on stage if they don't want her to be a subject of controversy. And Jerry, by the way, in all national media, she is a subject of controversy. It isn't only here. She is a subject of controversy. Then don't put her on the stage, because this is
why did they?
I don't know, Jerry. I don't.
Because talk shows like yours will reiterate what she said. Who cares?
Obviously, the Bernie Sanders supporters cared, because she did hit a chord with them when she said, stop being ridiculous. Look, here's the thing. If you're going to have a speaker on the stage, then you have to have accountability for that speaker. You're putting the speaker up there. The speaker says something, something that she perhaps shouldn't have said to Bernie Sanders supporters. But that is the convention's and Hillary Clinton's prerogative of why they put her up there. I just think if I was a Bernie Sanders supporter, this would infuriate me that I was being patted on the head by somebody that says, don't worry, don't, you know, just be content with what you got. No. The callers that have called in here today have said, and they're right, Americans are angry, and they've been angry, and they believe the political system is rigged and the economic system is rigged, and they believe Hillary Clinton is the status quo. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're not going to have any more time to take any phone calls here. Sort of misjudged the time. We went that 30 minutes flew by, and I thank you for all your phone calls. One of the things we're going to have this conversation, I think, through the week to see if the Democrats can and the Democratic Party can unite. So we'll continue this discussion. And tomorrow, Lieutenant Governor candidates David Zuckerman and Keisha Ram, and plus Ann Galloway talking about EB-5 program. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV News Radio on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year, 85 years, celebrating the future. AM 550 WDEV, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barry, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com, and you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.